future. There are no people. There are no people in the future. No people at all. There are no people in the future. Where did all my people go? There are no people in the future. Let me try my people call.
Everybody, welcome. Yes, it is Raging Chickens Out to Coop podcast. It is Friday, September 10th, 2021. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken. Each week, I talk to that motherload of middle-aged millennial angst, Sean Kitchen, about the good, the bad, and the ugly in state and national politics. Yes, we are streaming live. Yes, live on our YouTube channel. Don't forget to smash that subscribe button, like the stream, and hit that bell so you know every time that we go live. We're launching a little bit earlier this morning, and we're going to have a little bit of a condensed show this morning because I got a heart out today. I got to get head out. And the good news is that, you know, this is my, it's ragweed time, and these are like my worst allergies. And, you know, so it's great going back to work at a time when we have inadequate protections of COVID at our university and my allergies are kicking my butt, right? So who the heck knows what's going on? We shall see. Anyways, I digress. On today's show, President Biden announces a COVID vaccine mandate for all businesses with 100 or more employees. His administration seems to have had it with the politicization of the pandemic. And in his address last night, he said, "What makes it incredibly more frustrating is that we have the tools to combat COVID-19, and a distinct minority of Americans, supported by a distinct minority of elected officials, are keeping us from turning the corner. We've been patient, but our patience is wearing thin, and your refusal has cost all of us." Can I just say, bravo, Biden. And looks like centrist-leaning Democrats are waffling on the big infrastructure bill a bit. Yep. Writing in the American Prospect, David Dayen has it right. The Democrats are bowing to the, quote, curse of artificial scarcity, allowing right-wing frames about deficits and wrong-headed economic reasoning to whittle away at critical climate infrastructure and other infrastructure investment. You know, because the world's not on fire, there's not massive floods going on, but in unrelated... Oh, no, wait, I'm sorry. Related news, scientists are finding that animals are literally shape-shifting to adapt to climate change. Yeah, that's right. Birds' beaks are getting longer. Ears are getting longer because they need to cool off more. But hey, no rush, Joe Manchin. Speaking of Manchin, looks like his daughter is in a little bit of hot water right now. Yep, seems like she was cashing in on that EpiPen price inflation scandal. Uh-oh. You know, it'd be a shame if, you know, somebody just showed up at Joe Manchin's door and be like, "Joe, listen, I heard about your daughter. And, you know, I wish there was something we could do about it. But, you know, we got our hands full with this infrastructure bill. And, you know, until that gets passed, there's nothing I could do. But if there was only something that would help move that along so we could put it behind us. But good luck, Joe. Good luck." And, yes, uh-oh, Joe Rogan, is the paste causing sterility in men? Looks like it. Studies are showing that ivermectin may do just that. That's right. Well, you know, this is one of those moments where I'm like, wait a minute, am I getting this right? Does this mean that God does work in mysterious ways? I don't know. Anyways, today in a PA focus... Oh my God, you're gonna love it. Sean's it was a banner day, let's just say, for PA Spotlight yesterday. But Senate Democrat Vincent Hughes cited Pennsylvania Spotlight's research at the end of yesterday's sham fraud hearing. Yep, it was so good it forced Senator Chris Dush, to end the line of question and gavel out of the hearing and run away! Oh, God. Senator Hughes asked Fulton County Commissioner Stuart Ulsh about an email he sent to a fellow committee members asking them to help overturn the 2020 election. It looks here you're saying it would be great if we could help out Trump. I don't know. I'm just reading this email. I don't know about this email. It was beautiful. Oh, God. And in my neck of the woods, Kutztown University President Kenneth Hawkinson warns faculty, staff, and students about an even bigger threat than COVID. Yes, discussions about a possible solidarity action in support of Steve Oros and others who, at the university who were denied ADA accommodations because they're at severe risk of contracting COVID and dying. Right? So, God forbid a few faculty members show up in coveralls with signs that say support Steve Oros. No, no. Hawkinson had to write a 720-word missive to make sure to sound the alarm so everybody knew that no, no, there's not an actual biohazard on campus, calling protesters unreasonable. Right? This is something that hasn't even happened yet. Now, you compare that to Hawkinson's defense, right, of the radical right-wing kind of religious nuts that come to campus and insult students about their sexuality, where he says, everybody's got a right to free speech. There's nothing we can do. There's nothing we can do. So he clearly has his priorities straight here. It shows you when you govern by PR, this is what happens, right? Right. Anyways, I have a little bit more about that, but just wow, just wow. In today's last call, we'll tell a little about what's kind of going on in our neck of the woods. Not a whole lot. We're cutting out the space news today because I could barely kind of like hold on to my schedule this week. I want to remind you to tune into the Rick Smith Show. It streams every night on YouTube, Twitter, and wherever you get your stream content. You can also check out his shows on freespeech.org and his newly launched shows on WBAI in New York and KPFK in Los Angeles. Congratulations, Rick and the team, on that huge get. And make sure to subscribe to the Rick Smith Show daily podcast on iTunes, Podbeans, wherever you get your podcast. Head on over to thericksmithshow.com for all those details. And look, if you haven't already, you got to check out the Sisters of the Night Caucus podcast. You can, oh, and thank you for the stickers, by the way. Yes, indeed. You can find it on Anchor, Spotify, iTunes, or wherever you get your podcasts. The amazing PA women stirring the political cauldron behind this podcast rock the house, and they know where the bodies are buried. Yes, sure. Make sure to follow them on Twitter at the Night Caucus. That's at the Night Caucus on Twitter, and subscribe to their podcast. Attention gamers, the Game Inn is a Quakertown-based, black family-owned gaming store. They're friends of the show, and they've got everything from retro N64s to the latest consoles, video games for all platforms, collectibles, action figures, Funko Pops, you name it, right? And kids, back to school, that means you get a discount with every A on your report card. You got to check them out on Facebook at The Game Inn, that's with two N's, The Game Inn, right? Or follow them on Twitter at The Game Inn. Got a question about a game, looking for something particular, shoot him an email at thegameinpa, that's with two N's, thegameinpa@gmail.com. And a special shout out goes to Jonathan Mann, who wrote our intro song, There Are No People in the Future. Check out all his great stuff on his YouTube page and follow him on Twitter at songadayman, again with two N's, at songadayman on Twitter. This coming Monday on Out to Coop Live, I welcome Dawn Curran and Carolyn Ciarino to the show. Dawn and Carolyn are candidates for school board in the Penridge School District. Yes, that school district. They are running as part of the Penridge United slate of candidates in a school district that has been overrun by a right-wing agenda seeking to undermine mask mandates and fan the flames of racism with GOP's critical race theory talking points. Last month, we talked to the two other candidates for the Penridge United slate, Adrian King and David O'Donnell. We hope you'll join us this Monday at 7 p.m. on Out to Coop Live to see all about their candidacy. And look, I'm telling you, school boards is where it's at right now, especially in Bucks County. So making sure that you're paying attention and getting involved and helping them out is really going to be huge. And a huge shout out goes to our newest patron, Pink Lady, who became a patron at the $15 a month level. Thank you, Pink Lady. And further thanks goes once again to Steve and Dan, who joined Pink Lady in becoming patrons this month. Thanks to you and everyone who's helped support our work. Because look, if we want a progressive future, we need progressive media. Support Pull No Punches, homegrown progressive media today by becoming a patron for Raging Chicken for as little as $5 a month. Just go to patreon.com/rcpress. Look, if we're going to build that progressive future, we're going to need progressive media. Become a patron for the price of a good beer once a month and help keep the media and the movement and the movement and media. Head on over to patreon.com/rcpress and become a patron for as little as $5 a month. Woo, Sean, how you doing, man?
I am doing amazing. How are you?
You know, I've made it through 2 weeks of school, and so far I don't have COVID, as far as I know yet. Although several students now have COVID, and you know, so it's got me a little anxious. You know, my kids going back to school in a school district where they have mask optional, you know, rules, and now they're looking for ways to subvert Governor Wolf's mask mandate. So, you know, that causes another added layer of stress. But other than that, great.
Well, it sounds like the world's not burning where you're at, so that's good.
No, just underwater.
Yeah, it's still waterlogged.
Yeah, yes, indeed. Well, hey, so let's just kind of talk about some of this stuff. Like I said, we're going to have a little bit of an abbreviated show today, but I did want to talk a little bit about, I guess, credit where credit is due. I don't know how much of what you saw Biden say last night, but man, I was like,
I was at the bar. I did not see anything last night.
Well, I figured, but,
I was getting in some victory laps.
Yes. But I have to say, you know, I went out for, I walked my dog last night, right? I walked my dog before I'm going to bed, and I was listening to, Chris Hayes's, show All In. And, I hadn't heard about anything. I hadn't really even checked in with the news all day. I had a long teaching day. My daughter has ice skating that I take her to. So it was like, it was a blitz of a day. And so I'm walking my dog at the end of the night, I got an ear, you know, listening to it on my earphones, and I'm walking and I hear, Chris Hayes highlight, Biden's, address last night. And Biden was just like taking it to him. Like, okay.
It's Senate brain.
Well,
it's,
you know,
like it's like what Alex Preen says, like with Senate brain, just like he has this like mode and he's just gonna fucking go on it. And like he did it with Afghanistan. It's like, fuck you people.
No, that's exactly it. You know, and I think that, you know, like my wife had a great take on this, right? She's like, you know, this is like so different, because like he's got nothing to lose. Like, this is a guy who's been wanting to be here for his entire life, and he's like, he's in his last years. You're like, you know, Obama was all we worried about his legacy and how he looked, and Biden just like, you know, he's like, unker, you know, and like, so I was like, Sleepy Joe. I love to see that Sleepy Joe gave way to Grumpy Joe, and I'm all in on Grumpy Joe. That was good.
And it's also, yeah, I think about like, I mean, how much of this, like, he lost his wife. He lost a wife. What, three kids?
Yep.
Like, you know, I mean, like, he's one of the, like, his personal life is probably like one of the more tragic with all any like totally. President like United States history. So like, but I mean, the, like, how much is that weighing on his decision too? It's just, yeah, like, you people are going to needlessly die because of this.
Yep.
Like, we don't need, I mean, the story's happening now. Like, every death that is happening needlessly. Like, it, I mean, like, there's,
it's tragic. It really,
no,
is.
It is. No, it is. I mean, it's like, there might be like some gallows humor with like some of it, but no, it's all tragic. It's like, these people shouldn't be dying. They're getting convinced by their echo chambers about this. Like, I was talking to my mom this week, like, she didn't realize what the fuck ivermectin was when I mentioned it.
Yeah.
Like, and I had to explain to her, like, how out of touch with reality, like what an echo chamber is and how it operates, and like how out of touch with reality, like the Republican echo chamber is, because they have no legitimate news sources.
Right.
And it's like, the people believe this shit, and it's just like, it's, and because my mom's like, I wonder how people like can believe this stuff. And well, like, that's it. And the people dying from this is that echo chamber killing them.
Yeah. I mean, it's really true. And, you know, and the thing is, too, is the one thing that's been really good for me, I think, right, about going back to teaching and kind of talking with students and things like this, and, you know, just in kind of like normal conversation, right, you know, about like class, because I, you know, do this writing assignment, and they're kind of writing about their experiences as a way to begin the class and things like this. And a lot of them are writing about COVID. And it was just, you know, those kind of things are kind of reminders to me that really it is true that the majority of Americans, and I would say even lean to say like really the kind of vast majority of Americans, are really doing the right thing. Right. It is a very kind of vocal minority that is exercising disproportionate power in kind of like in our national politics, in our state politics, in our local politics. And you know, it's what I was so encouraged hearing Biden's words last night was just because it's like that, you know, the way he said things, like said, look, we've been patient, but we're done. It's like getting past that fear factor that Democrats have been so, like, you know, so much imprisoned for so long, it seems to me. And I think that's helpful, that kind of discourse, to say, look, and Howard Stern this week, right, basically came out and basically was saying, like, I don't give an F about your freedom. Right. I want my freedom. I want to be able to go outside. I want to be able to go back to events. I want to be able to walk down the street without worrying about it. And it goes back to that famous thing, right, that Rick always talks about, is like, you know, your freedom to throw a punch ends at the tip of my nose. And it's that same principle.
And it's also like, I mean, this stuff is like indoctrined. Well, it used to be at some point in like Supreme Court ruling that like you do not have the right to harm people over your own personal freedoms. Like, for instance, like your personal freedoms end when your actions start harming others.
And
that's why like smoking bans are constitutional.
100%.
Because your freedom to smoke indoors is killing everyone around you, like, who doesn't want to deal with the smoking. And the same thing should apply here with this.
100%.
Like you are putting people at risk because of your actions, and you don't have the freedoms for that. You have to put the greater good ahead of your personal freedoms.
Yeah, and you know what? And I think that the kind of intimidation factor that small group, small vocal group have been able to kind of exercise is also, you know, it's reinforced in a sense by the virus, because these people, not only are they, you know, well, yeah, not only are they kind of making this claim, this anti-masking stuff, but they're showing up places without their mask yelling at people, right? So they're potentially literally a weapon, right? A biological weapon, right? That they're kind of like entering into spaces, and you're like, whoa. So like, for example, I've been very, as long as my daughter is like remains unvaccinated, I've been very cautious about kind of like going to public gatherings, right? Where normally I would be there like speaking out about stuff, like, but now I'm really concerned, right? And I'm not the only person that's like that. And so like, you know, these people should not be able to exercise, right? It's hardly even freedom, it's just their kind of like their petty desire, you know? It's like a loud snowflake. Yeah, it's a grievance. That's a perfect way to put it.
I mean, they're like, they're just driven on grievance politics at this point, and that's it.
Yeah, so, you know, look, I mean, he's going to talk about 100 million, upwards of 100 million kind of Americans now will kind of be vaccinated or decide to kind of like quit their job and go kind of like, you know, go to the grift mill or something like that. Who knows? But, you know, again, I think the vast majority of people are going to step up, they're going to get the vaccination. Right. And then that is going to be a huge impact. Right. A bunch of things. And now what it also does now, like places like Kutztown University and school districts, right, are not covered by that mandate. Right. Just because of like that's a federal government and what a federal government has. But now it sets a bar. Right. Now it becomes like an organizing tool to be able to go to your local school district, to be able to go to your university, to go to your kind of like, you know, local office, maybe that doesn't have 100 employees in it, and kind of say, hey, let's do the same thing. Right. This is what we should be doing. Right. And then, you know, again, puts a different kind of pressure back down on these kind of, you know, these rabid kind of radical anti-maskers and stuff, which is really, really good, I think, for the society. So on the other side of that ledger, however, is the what we're seeing at the infrastructure bill, right? And I just, you know, wanted to kind of go into this too deep, but it's we were told initially that this week we were going to have a pretty good sense about what the bill that was going forward, that was going to go into reconciliation. And that seems to be stalling out a little bit. Right. In part because, you know, and again, I said, David Dayen says it right. It says, you know, the curse of artificial scarcity, right, where, you know, you've got these conservative Democrats and people like Joe Manchin and things like this who are insisting on, you know, on this kind of austerity mindset when it comes to infrastructure, when it's just not the way government spending works. So they're boxing themselves into these corners, insisting that everything that they do gets, quote unquote, paid for. Right. And, you know, I'd encourage, I put a link in the show notes to go check out David Dayan's piece on this, because he lays out what this kind of infrastructure spending does and what it, and what it is. And it's absolutely essential when you're looking at kind of the challenges of climate change, when you're looking at the challenges of just like driving down the road, when you're talking about our caring infrastructure that is currently being decimated by this next wave of COVID, all that stuff. And instead, you know, you got Manchin is and some other Democrats who aren't, you know, don't have their faces plastered everywhere, are coming out and basically what he says is like, you know, I'll just read this part. He says, but instead of debating the finer points of how to most efficiently deliver these benefits, there's been a combination of anxiety attacks and Sophie choice style decision making among the Democratic caucus. Suddenly, a bill that represented the promise of the party's agenda is being ground into paste for the benefit of self-regarding conservative members. And it's true, right? I mean, it's a lesson that we should kind of take to heart. Again, when you have this kind of like disproportionate minority caucus, minority members who are actually dictating to the majority of Americans what's possible for them. We can't let that stand.
I think the House Democrats, the Progressive Caucus, should just sink the bill that's in the House right now if the Senate doesn't get through. Because, I mean, like, those are the ones who hold the power at this point. I mean, Joe Manchin's just blustering. I don't think he's going to. I think this ends up getting done, but like, I think Senate. I think it's time for House Democrats, especially the Progressive Caucus, to just sink the bill and make it. You know. Yeah, like, you know what I mean?
Yes. Yep.
Like, and just say fuck you. All right, you want to be the person people to sink this, or you want to be the person to be responsible for this not failing and not getting through a key part of President Biden's agenda, then okay, it's on you.
Yeah, and look, I think that, you know, there's something also to be said about the kind of the public facing organizing around this too as well. And what I mean by that is, you know, and I know that you already see this happening with members of the Progressive Caucus, kind of in the House too. They're actually showing up in kind of states around the country, right? They're basically saying, yeah, look, we're coming for you. Right.
I mean, like Bernie Sanders was going around the country.
Exactly.
I mean, did you see the Bernie Sanders socialism tour in the Midwest?
Yep.
And, you know, like, yeah, people were kind of surprised seeing everyone that showed out. But like, socialist policies have been popular in those areas of the country for generations.
Yeah.
Because of the New Deal.
Like, well, that's exactly
and
right.
And going back before the New Deal. Like, yes. Like.
That's exactly right. So, you know, I mean. What's been the one thing that's been a little bit surprising about this is also seeing, you know, the kind of the, say, mainstream media and some of the kind of opinion pieces that are pushing back editorials about, you know, concerns about, you know, again, highlighting the same kind of like budgetary constraints or deficit scarcity and all this other kind of nonsense. When, you know, again, we've talked about this on this show before. We were talking about modern monetary theory, the work that Stephanie Kelton has done when she was Bernie Sanders' advisor too, as well in Congress and the Budget Committee, you know, saying like, look, the federal government does not work like a household, right? You know, we have a fiat currency, right? Which means we can't run out of money, right? Which means as long as there's the money is going to something, there's an unfulfilled need, right? Then we're not in any crisis. And if anything, what the austerity politics of the Republicans for the past 40 years have done, and conservative Democrats have kind of pushed us, or corporate Democrats have pushed us in, is kind of creating the crisis of our infrastructure and our climate. So here you go, right? There are more than enough ways. There was an interesting thing. I don't know if you saw this. David Roberts was interview with him. I think it might have been at the end of Hayes's show the other night. But, you know, he does a lot of stuff, climate reporting. And one of the things that Biden's calling for is basically a switch to, I think I want to say 35% solar, or maybe I get a 50% solar by 2035 or something like this, right? That's a huge investment and tons of work, right? That's lots of jobs, right? And so there's work to be done. So the government spending goes into something where it's actually going to affect
create people. Money.
Well, it actually create it.
Creates more money.
Right? It's going to and it's responding to an unfilled need, right? So it's not just that it's going to people's pockets or they're going to sit around in their houses with like stacks of cash. No, it's going to be actually going to actually like tangible things that are out in the world. Right. The Republican tax cuts, or like Trump's tax cuts, for example, is that kind of stuff that's not good for the economy, because it does just sit around on their tables because they don't know what to do with it. So, yeah. You know, I really hope that this is going to that this is going to push forward. And so good hope on it. So I don't know. And I just thought it was also interesting in the midst of all this. We've got Manchin's daughter kind of we find out that Manchin's daughter actually played had a direct part in the EpiPen price inflation scandal. So that was always fun.
It would suck if she goes to jail.
Well, she may. Right. She actually may.
Right? I mean, I think a vote on an infrastructure bill might, you know, help hush things up a little bit.
You never know. You never know what's going to happen. It's amazing what happens when things, you know, things start looking up, you know. But, you know, look, you know, as long as you're as long as everyone's buying into the, you know, the punishment mentality, you know, you got to hold people accountable for their actions, Sean.
Yeah.
So, which, you know, I do have to say that, you know, that whole EpiPen price inflation was freaking disgusting. So,
absolutely.
And it was absolutely freaking disgusting. So, you know, we're kind of like having fun with it right now, but this is freaking disgusting. And you know, and I think that as Manchin has continued to hold up, really kind of key legislation, that, and people sort of digging into a little bit of his background and how he's making his money. And then you find the fallout that, you know, his family is also going to this stuff. That's going to come right. That's going to come home to roost, in his backyard, literally. So we shall see. Anyways, that's about all I
important
got for
news
today.
Of the week.
Yeah, let's get to the important news of the week. All right, well, listen, we're going to take a quick break and we're going to come back and
No.
What? I forgot. The important public service announcement, everybody. Public service announcement. Sean, take it away.
So, I mean, like, I included this in the notes as, like, he is, like, reading them.
Like, right, that's why I'm forgetting it now, right?
Yes. So, but a report came out this week that shows that for those who went on the paste, I don't know how much you have to take of ivermectin, but apparently it causes sterility in men. It gives a whole new shooting blast. like, but yeah, like, so good luck. I mean, good luck, Joe Rogan. Good luck to others who had that. But yeah, I mean, like, this is just fucking stupid at this point. But all right. I mean, that's all I got.
There you go. That's got to love that. Got to love that. And we should say that, you know, that study that, you know, again, there's questions about that study and things like this. And the fact that that's kind of starting to come out now and there's a concern about this, they'll look at it as just like, it's one of those things where, like I said at the top of the show, God works in mysterious ways. So anyways, we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, Sean is going to give us a window into some really kind of just, you know, lots of joy that took place in the Capitol over the past couple of days. All right. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken. We're going to be back with this quick break. We want to remind you that you can head on over to patreon.com/RC Press and you can become a patron for as little as $5 a month. Help keep the media in the movement, the movement, the media. We'll be back right after this quick break.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two.
On this day in labor history, the year was 2012. That was the day the Chicago Teachers Union walked off the job for the first time in 25 years. The historic week-long strike resonated nationwide among trade unionists and served to reinvigorate the labor movement. Certainly, higher wages and better benefits were among the teachers' demands. The city's mayor, Rahm Emanuel, had canceled the union's wage increase, laid off close to 1,000 teachers, and went on the attack against seniority rights and working conditions. The strike enjoyed wide public support among parents and the public. Teachers emphasized broader educational problems they faced, namely the attacks fueled by corporate privatization. They wanted a return to more traditional forms of education rather than simply preparing students for endless rounds of testing. They wanted more art, music, and gym classes. And they demanded stable funding for social support services for the most vulnerable at-risk students. Union teachers understood that the Board of Education was using standardized testing to get rid of teachers and schools in order to privatize education, all in the name of turning around failing schools and helping the kids. Though the contract was less than perfect, it showed the power working people have to hold the line against continued assaults on their standards of living, especially in the public sector. The CTU was able to beat back attempts at merit pay and increased use of student test scores in teacher evaluations. They won first-time recall rights, supply reimbursements, and liberal arts classes. There were concessions, however, made on seniority rights, pay for laid-off teachers, and longer workdays. But the CTU demonstrated that strikes can win in a period of extended anti-union onslaughts.
Labor History in 2 brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com.
Hey, welcome back. Welcome back. This is Kev Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken, here once again with Sean Kitchen. So, Sean, it seems like, you know, just a kind of a constant stream of kind of fun stuff yesterday. Your Twitter account was pretty active, I have to say. And sounds like a lot of stuff kind of went down. So, first of all, a little clap and applause for PA Spotlight and having a really good day. Why don't you take us away?
Yes. So, Well, very busy day in the Capitol. Sorry, I had an email come through and I just totally fucked up transition. But no, we had a really good day in the Capitol yesterday. Very long day in the Capitol. The Republicans' fraud hearings started yesterday with the Senate and Intergovernmental Operations Committee. Before that hearing started at 1 o'clock, Senate Democrats who sat on that committee all had a press conference on voting rights. We were actually able to catch up with Senator Tony Williams and Senator Vincent Hughes as they were going into the Capitol. Like, Roxbury got up there. Roxbury and I were up there early, like, just bird-dogging people and chasing people down. But, like, no, we wanted to, like, have good conversations with them on their way in. And, like, Anthony Williams said something that really meant something. Like, this is the first time in my life growing up seeing the civil rights movement and seeing voting rights get enacted. This is the first time in my life we're seeing the actual rollback of these rights. And it's just like, it's just like, you know, and they don't know how to respond right now. But it's something we're going to have to, like, stand up to at some point. I feel like we're hitting that point soon. Tony Williams was saying that the press conference you had, Senator Steve Sancero call out the Bradley Foundation for having an $850 million endowment that funded all this anti-democratic stuff over the past year or two. I mean, like, this is all we've been saying here for years. All this stuff connected to the Commonwealth Foundation, Jeffrey Yass, their funders. The person who runs this committee is Chris Dush. He took over $400,000 in in-kind contributions and contributions from the two PACs that Matt Briette run, which are pretty much solely funded by Jeffrey Yass, who's Pennsylvania's richest person, who's worth like $13 billion coming out of the pandemic. Like, I mean, like, this is what the forces that we're up against with this stuff.
Right.
Money-wise, especially dark money-wise. So, like, that's a narrative that we have to get out there. But, you know, we spent the summer obviously talking about this, but, like, not playing on their ground, not playing on their terms. We spent the summer filing rights to know requests, doing our own, like, digging into, like, election-related emails. We still have more emails coming. We got emails that are pretty damning, shows what bullshit these people were doing all in the run-up to the election. You have, like, the person who was speaking at this commission was literally asking Senator Ward and Senator Mastriano, who also sit on this committee, to overturn the fucking election that helped out the Trump campaign. I mean, so we got that email that got made some waves. You know, when we saw that Fulton County Commissioner was speaking yesterday, we made sure to re-up the email. We had a couple of other organizations. Better PA was one of them that they've been working on the prison gerrymandering stuff. They were putting out our stuff, say, hey, PA Spotlight has the receipts. Here they are. That interaction on Twitter probably got going with the Senate staffers. I guarantee you the Senate staffers moved that over to, over to Senator Hughes. And, you know, trickled in. Like, it's a great interaction between that, like, the people outside the committee tweeting and people being glued to their phones during the committee. Like, I know, I mean, like, I don't know if, like, the, like, Ulsh would have gotten confronted the way he did if it wasn't for that tweeting, but it was pretty awesome. And then, you know, pretty much Vincent Hughes just straight up asked, like, so, Pennsylvania Spotlight wrote, you said that Commissioner Ulsh said this on, yeah, the way he just framed it was awesome. I'm not going to be able to do it, but he totally just, like, ran over Dutch.
So there's what was brilliant about it was this, right? So Hughes basically, he says, you know, I just got this email, and I'm just curious about this. And he's got his phone in front of him, and he's going like, so in this email, it says, and he starts reading the email, and he's got this great look on his face, like, I'm just trying to understand what this email's all about here, and it's just kind of in my phone here, and I'm just kind of reading it. So I'm wondering if you've heard about this thing too. It was brilliant. And then Douche has nothing, like, no idea what to do. He's like, and he tried, you know, because, like, you know what, very often that, like, the GOP is kind of like ready for these things, because Democrats are generally not really good at doing this stuff. So, you know, they're ready for it. They've got some sort of kind of, like, you know, whatever, made up procedural thing, or, you know, they call for decorum or whatever it is. He clearly has no idea this is coming. And he's like, well, just this hearing is not. He was like, no, this has direct relevance to the purpose of this hearing. Right. We're talking about voting. Right. And this is relevant to this stuff. Like, for example. Right. And then Douche is just like, it's great.
So, and then at some point, I mean, like, with this email, like, this email came from his private email account, his Comcast account, mm-hmm. right? So the way we got this email was because he then emailed the other representative, the other commissioner, on their government-ran county email,
yeah,
and then emailed Topper, Mastriano, and Judy Ward. So, I mean, if he would have remained on the private, if they would have went, like, Ward, Mastriano, and the other guy's private email, that would never become public. But, like, I mean, these people aren't that smart.
Well, but I would put it in a different way, right? I would put it that slightly different way.
These people are pretty careless with...
But it shows you how out in the open they are about this stuff among themselves.
Yes.
Right? I mean, think that's pretty, the key.
Yeah, they're pretty belligerent with this stuff.
That's what I mean. It's like, they don't, like, it doesn't even occur to them, because, like, they're already having these conversations on a daily basis.
And they're speaking to, like, a captive audience. Like, you know what I mean? It's exactly. Not like they're speaking to, like, they're not trying to, like, make believers out of it. I mean, they're speaking to, like, true believers in this stuff. Like,
right.
I know. I mean, you saw it with the fucking Mike Jones email, like, the dead voters. Like...
That's great.
Yeah. Like, apparently that got, like, 8 or 9 million impressions on Twitter, like, itself. Not the tweet, but, like, that link. So, I mean, like, Maddow, Washington Post, like, all these other people started sharing it. But, no, I mean, like, yeah. So, like, there's this stuff. I mean, like, but it also shows what we've been able to pull off with these emails. The digital organizing and stuff like that, and, like, how much information it provides.
Well, you know,
it was also, like, a pretty, like, meta moment watching, like,
yeah, exactly.
The email I dug up, my research, get read to this guy's face.
Yeah, that's awesome.
I think, because, like, you never really had the opportunity to just read an email straight to someone's face like that. Yeah. Like, amazing was just, like, I wonder if Ulsh knew we had his emails before, or what was in them, or. Like, or I mean, it, but it also shows you how this operates again with the echo chamber.
Right.
I guarantee you, Dutch had no idea we published this, because they don't, like, pay attention to news. They're fucking reading the Epic Times.
Right. Exactly. That's exactly it.
Like, I mean, they're reading the Epic Times at this point. Like, they're not taking exactly. anything seriously.
Yeah. So let me, I would, you know, and I want to give y'all a little bit even more credit than you're saying, not because I wouldn't even say what you're able to do. I think, look, we were talking about this way before you ever kind of, you know, started working with them or other things like this, or, you know, the idea is that this is the kind of stuff that investigative journalism should be doing, right? This is the kind of stuff that we should be able, should be just a matter of course in terms of kind of digging
really
into what's going on.
And really should be outsourced to...
Right. And so
that's how I feel as a journalist, like someone who likes journalism and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Like that journalist part of me, like this stuff, like, you know, like they should be investing in it, but they're not.
Right. And I want to be clear. There are some absolutely freaking awesome journalists, right, in the state that are kind of digging into stuff.
Yeah.
Right. And so I want to be clear with that. This is happens like this has been a long.
It's just not enough.
No, a defunding of the kind of investigative wings of a lot of kind of newspapers and local newspapers kind of around the country. Right. And in Pennsylvania, especially. So it's like, you know, it's really good to see. And I think that, you know, it shows you that when you do the work, right, you rake the muck, right? There's stuff there that you find out that is absolutely critical for understanding what is actually happening in our politics and why it's happening. So it's like kudos for you for doing that work, right? And you know, especially in the absence of it. And like, again, no, that is not kind of belittling all journalists in the state, because believe me, there's been awesome investigative journalism that's taken place. But this is the kind of stuff that there's lots of room to do these things. And I would also say that it's also a model for what we should be doing kind of locally as well, right? And kind of in our regional areas and our kind of local areas to find out actually what's going on and what's behind this. Because a lot of times people will just engage kind of at the level of surface, not, again, because people's lives are busy. So kudos to you guys for doing that work.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. Well, hey, you know, so I guess you guys are done now, and then so that you're going to hang everything up, and so, you know, you did this and it's done. But I suspect that that's not the case. I suspect that more fun is on the way. So I'm excited.
Yes. No, we have things in the
hopper. Oh, God.
I mean, like... No, but this is like type of stuff where like I really enjoy doing is just being able to just sit back, file a bunch of rights and no requests, and see like what the fruits bear. I mean, like the way that this happened, like all of this came about, was that original reporting that happened in the Arizona Mirror about Fulton County and like the election. That stoked my interest. Like, hey, we did this last year in the summertime. I'm going away for a few weeks. Now's the perfect time to file and yep. get this out there. And no, I mean, like, it, you see what's going on.
It's kind of like you're letting the process, you're letting the work happen by itself while you're on vacation. It's like a Disney Fantasia kind of thing. I'll put the right to know request in. I'm going to go on vacation. The work happened. I'll come back and here we go. You know?
Yeah. So
it's awesome. So in my neck of the woods this week, like I said, it's been a really rocky back to school, return to campus year. Kutztown University, where I teach, as everybody knows, just will remind everybody that I think it should be clear, but given the warnings that our administration is sending out to people right now, I am not an official spokesperson for the university. Sorry, I couldn't resist that. But Kutztown University has chosen to do the administration, I should say, has chosen to do the absolute minimum when it comes to complying with CDC recommendations to, you know, stem off the spread of COVID. And what I mean by that is, you know, they wanted to go back with no masks. In the fall, until Berks County, for example, declared that it was we're in a code red mode about spreading. They said, okay, I guess we have to do this. Right. So, you know, you're talking about the opposite of being proactive, right? You're waiting for other people to tell you what to do instead of thinking about what keeps your community safe. And the irony here, of course, is that the universities and its mission statements and all this talks about itself as a caring community. When they rebranded and spent several hundred thousand dollars about rebranding the university, that caring community was something that they're really big on. That's what they talk about in the media and their PR materials and all those addresses and all that kind of stuff, right? So to do the bare minimum when it comes to actually keeping people safe and caring about people's livelihood, it just, you know, whatever, is like a hypocrisy just on its face, right? And it shows you that, you know, this has been a longstanding problem at Kutztown University about the administration believing that the way that you kind of like promote your university, right, is that you, everything is done through PR, right? That you can cut your staff, that you can increase classes, you can eliminate programs, but as long as you put a happy face on everything, that everything's going to be fine, right? So the problem is when you're confronted with something like COVID, like a pandemic, right, where, you know, PR...
A global emergency.
Like I don't know if you know this, Sean, but PR does not, in effect, actually kill the virus. PR actually just kind of can pretend that it's not there, but the virus has a way of kind of just doing the things that virus does, right?
Because, like, kill people.
Because it's a virus, right? And not a marketing brochure. So I'll start with the frustration is that a lot of faculty have been frustrated that there have not been organizing efforts by, say, our faculty union or local faculty union, other organizations, to actually push back and demand that we have stronger COVID precautions. And initially, faculty were told that it's because the state won't allow us to do this stuff, so we're just doing what the state tells us to do. And, you know, that's easy. You know, that's a really easy to poke holes in, because there's other universities that have other people, and they have things like websites and email addresses that you can ask them, or you can look on their web pages to see what other universities, especially ones in the state system of higher education, are doing. And you find out that, oh, Westchester University, for example, is requiring proof of vaccination from all its students. And if the students are not vaccinated, they have to submit to weekly testing. Essentially what Joe Biden talked about last night, right, as mandating. So they're doing that, and they're having all sorts of precautions. And as a way of encouraging their students to get vaccinated, they actually, the university, this is the administration, they offered to actually give scholarships, right? They have it like an award. You put your name in a hat, you show us your vaccination card, you get put your name in a hat for a scholarship that you could win. That's awesome. And the faculty union, they saw that, and they were like, that's a great idea. Why don't we do it too? So the local faculty union at Westchester University, which is also my union, ABSCUF, they decided to offer a couple more $2,000 scholarships, you know, to encourage students to go out and get vaccinated, right? That's what you call like a proactive push, right? You have a mandate, you're doing, and they do, you know what, something else they do there, Sean? They do a little something, I don't know if you've heard of this, contact tracing.
Yeah, what's that?
Yeah, well, you see, like, so if a student goes into a class and gets COVID, right, that means other students that were in that class with that student are notified that they actually, that somebody had COVID in that class, and that maybe they might want to get tested too, for, and they, you know, just to be extra cautious. Kutztown University, of course, has opted out of that. You know, it's all like students ideally should, you know, tell other people that they have COVID, but, you know, it's, you know, the honor system here. Right. And the university is not going to do contact tracing. We actually had a faculty member be told this week that, yes, well, you know, is there contact tracing? They say, yes. You know, when the student's in close contact with somebody with COVID, we do that. And they're like, OK, well, a student in my class told me that they had COVID. They're like, oh, we don't consider a classroom close contact. It's only if they're like in the dorm living with each other. A classroom, however, that's packed to the gills, right, is not. Also, I teach, you know, classes, right, in rooms that are kind of small, and we have course caps on how many students are supposed to be on in those courses. And I teach writing and composition, right, and, you know, we had a course cap on that. And so as a way to make sure that, you know, they're complying with social distancing requirements, what the university did is increase the course cap and put more students in the classes, to some points where classrooms had to be moved because they violated fire codes, right? So you can't tell me that you're doing the best and you're actually following all the recommendations and making sure people are safe, right? When you're doing, your practices are exactly the opposite of that. And sure, you could point to your plan online, but they have all the wiggle words that, and they know this, right? They know this. Unless if you say students must show their proof of vaccination, right? That is different than saying students should show their proof of vaccination, right? So that would be in a moral universe, everybody should do this. But, you know, some people, they don't do this. So it's the honor system. If you say must, then there's a consequence attached to that, right? There's no consequences attached to not reporting this stuff, right? You should tell other people that you're exposed to, but, you know, there's no compulsion, there's no system, there's no organization for it. Faculty members have been consistently sitting there trying to find ways of getting answers to basic questions about when we get exposed, right? So that's part of the context, right? And groups of faculty members on their own now, right, without the support of kind of, say, the organizing structure of a local faculty union or a university senate or other existing organizations, are trying to organize on their own to try to push to get stuff done. That's the context in which we had Steve Oros on last week, right? Steve Oros, as you know, we interviewed him on Out to Coop Live last week. I talked about his case a couple weeks ago. You have somebody who had a heart transplant, right, and whose doctor, and we had a remarkable recovery because he put in the effort, right, and he put like extra effort in order to recover, had a great recovery, and his doctors actually cleared him to come back to teach, but said, look, you can't go into a face-to-face classroom. Right, because if you're a heart transplant, right, a recipient, right, patient, you are considered, and you could look this up in CDC guidelines and things like this, of the highest risk of severe or fatal reactions if you contract COVID, right? So they're basically saying, look, you know, yeah, we think that your heart is healthy enough that you could go online, teach classes to students, do all the grading, and have that kind of dynamic, but you can't put yourself at risk because you could potentially die. And Steve Oros, of course, went forward. He said, okay, tells the university this. The university said, oh, sorry, we're going to deny your ADA request. You know, no. You said that we have you listed as in person. And because COVID's over, and literally the university is saying that we are now in pre-pandemic times, right? As in, like, we're all sitting there in the classroom in masks, and they're like, hey, welcome back to the pre-pandemic times. And we're all like,
right, like the Delta wave is about to surge through.
Exactly, right? So they do this, and there's been this ongoing fight, right? And so a group of faculty, I'm one of them, right? We're saying, like, look, we got to find some way to kind of like support Steve, right? Support him. And kind of this small group of people got talked to, say, you know what, you know, if Steve is going to go and kind of like bring his case and let people know about what's going on, because as Steve will be the first to tell you, he's not the only one. There's several other faculty members that are in the same situation. There are other staff members who are in the same situation, but they have been more reluctant to come forward for a variety of different reasons, right? Mostly to fear for their jobs. But he's been willing to do this. So, you know, and I'm like, well, damn, I'm not going to let Steve do this on him by himself. Like, say, oh, Steve, like, you're the one with the heart transplant, so good luck to you. No, I'm going to stand with this guy, right? Other faculty members felt that same way. And so he had this kind of idea, right? So as a way of drawing attention to the case and as a way of kind of engaging this, you know, you ever see like those painter coveralls, Sean?
Yeah.
Right. So you have the painter coveralls, go by the administration building, right? And kind of like draw attention, have some information, kind of draw attention to what's happening to both to Steve, because he's being screwed, right? They're being treated inhumanely, right? And the university is putting a lot of people at risk, right? And, from what I understand, our local faculty union keeps on going to the meet and discuss and saying, listen, we need better protocols. And they're like, yeah, we'll get back to you. And as far as I know, there is no other plan. There is no other organization that is saying that, you know, putting pressure upon the administrations to do the right thing, right? And there's not even, despite what the chancellor has said about, we have systemists, we're all in this together. It's just a hodgepodge of everybody do their own thing. There is no coordinated effort to make sure that people are safe. It's all PR, right? So, okay, if you're going to fight the PR war, okay, here you go. We'll show up in coveralls and have our messages and all this kind of stuff. And then after that, we'll kind of, you know, maybe do some teaching in our coveralls, right? You know, that kind of thing. So, you know, there's discussion about this in the faculty listserv. And so this today, shortly before we went on air today, President Hawkins sent out this kind of 720-word missive to the faculty, students, and staff, right? Basically, like, really. Now, you got to understand this about this guy before I read you a piece of this. And I know I'm going on about this, but
he seems pretty thin-skinned.
Well, what you got to understand is that when you have these like religious fanatics that show up on campus, like with their Bibles, insulting students, saying that they're going to go to hell, calling like girls sluts, right? Because they have a pair of shorts on or something like this, right? Say, I mean, all this horrible, horrible insults being inflicted. President Hawkinson is the first to come out and say, we got to respect First Amendment rights. So make sure that, you know, you can walk by them, but we all have the right to speak. And that's it, right? Doesn't condemn them out of source. Doesn't kind of go out of thing. But here you go. You have a few faculty members and maybe potential some students, maybe some staff members. I don't know. thought about. We're in a plan of do this little kind of action, right? And with these coveralls to be able to say to demonstrate this effect, right? So here's a piece of his email that he sent out today. My response to this was like, I wrote an email, but well, I'll read it first. I'll do it here. So here's his response to this kind of like what I would say vanilla kind of action to do a minimal kind of draw attention to a really critical issue. So he says, to the Kutztown University community, it has come to our attention that some members of our community have been planning a demonstration on Tuesday to protest the university's COVID-19 protocols. As happened last year when five demonstrators wore Black Death Halloween costumes and stood in front of the lawn of the president's residence, my house, this year's demonstrators are being asked to wear quote-unquote hazmat or hazardous material costumes, and if faculty, to wear these uniform-like garments to class. Right? We respect everyone's right to protest. We feel the need to let our community know that if this demonstration were to occur, it's not an actual bio threat to our campus or classrooms. Students and staff should not be alarmed by the appearance of demonstrators. If there were an actual emergency, the campus would be notified through our KU alert system. And frankly, to create a bio threat scenario on our campus as a rhetorical strategy, well, or to instill fear among students and employees is irresponsible. Under normal circumstances, observing individuals walking around campus or appearing in classrooms in hazmat uniforms would result in massive security response to protect our community from potential harm. I could go on, but I'm not. I mean, like, literally, my response, I sent this back to the listener. I mean,
like, for this is just like, without your reading aside.
Yes.
Like, it just amazes. It amazes me, like,
blows my mind.
From like, even doing the political stuff and like them, the fact that like they felt the need to respond.
Yes, exactly.
Is
exactly.
Like a, that is like a fucking own goal. Like, I mean, like that is like, I mean, to some degree, that's almost like Wagner, like repeating our billboard on camera, totally. Which is like you never fucking 100%. Repeat.
Percent.
You never like repeat the messaging or the framing of the other side. Like,
well, look,
like, and it's just like, it, like, or the framing that they're directing at you, and he fucking just like,
oh my god,
did it.
It's like it was so like, look, you know,
now people are reading the email like, what the fuck is he talking about?
Well, look, I read this, right, and of course, like, I just can't let that stand, right? I mean, I can't, I have to respond, so I respond with. This is my, you know, again, strap in everybody. This is my response to President Hawkinson today. Thank you, President Hawkinson. This is literally the funniest thing I've read all week. I needed it. That's it.
I guarantee you, like, your emails are probably like, just filtered right into like a fucking trash bucket. Just like, just not even going to look at them.
Oh my God. It's just like, I think I just was like, my jaw dropped when I saw this.
You're just like,
you've got to be kidding me.
Yes. You're just like shaking your head. Just like,
I just like, well, look, I mean, I've told you this before. It's like, you know, people warn me about this. Cause like, you know, if we get it, you get a new president or you get a new administrator that comes to campus, right? I want to know about that person. I want to know what the experience was at the previous place of employment. So I call around and I ask faculty members or ask union members or whatever it might be at the other university. Hey, just give me a sense of this. You got this guy coming in. And I mean, cause you know, when somebody's kind of given their presentations, they're, you know, they got their best face on. I want to know what it's like to work with this person. Right. So I asked about this, and that's one of the things that I was told, right. Is that he has got this super thin skin. Right. And then he can't be wrong. Right. And if he's wrong about something, he'll never admit it. Right. And if he has any appearance of being like, you know, like causing a problem or he's at fault, he just can't take it. Right. And then he does this kind of stuff.
That's very Trump like.
Oh, totally. And frankly, I didn't. You got to understand, too, as well, is that, you know,
it's like that. It's almost like that men will do this, but. Won't go to therapy meme.
I was like, holy cow. You know, I mean, this is the guy who, if you remember, when we were going, was trying to force everybody back to in class, like in person classes at the height of the pandemic last year, put out this, like, you know, like on edge video about having to have grit and fortitude to go after the virus, to get back in there in the classroom. We have to be like the coal miners who contracted black lung and soldier on so we could power the nation. I mean, like, whoa, buddy. You know, how about you do what a whole bunch of other university presidents did and said, like, hey, let's make sure we keep our community safe and make sure that we can deliver education in this environment in the best creative possible way. No, he goes off on this kind of like rant. And apparently he's still stuck in that place. You know, I think that's why we hear all this stuff about pre-pandemic and so on. But for him, here's the thing, right? He's not even responding to a protest that has been like organized for weeks and is going to happen. He's responding to a discussion about the possibility of doing something like this. That's what's incredible to me. And he will spend all the time in the world doing that. And basically also denying ADA requests of faculty and staff members who could potentially die from contracting the virus. And instead basically saying, too bad, good luck without a paycheck for a semester. Maybe you'll survive this. That's amazing to me. And, you know, it's like, you know, whatever. I mean, I don't know what you do with somebody like that. And frankly, it's a bit troubling for me is that our faculty at the university are not up in arms about what's happening here. And I understand it to a certain degree because, you know, like, look, people are anxious and stressed. I know I certainly am and on edge. But, you know, this is what happens when you don't go with an organizing model. You don't constantly organize your members to make sure that your interests are going to be there. When you leave it over to kind of like a business unionism way of thinking about stuff, you end up with stuff like this. Right. And I think that, you know, and, you know, we shall see what happens here. And we've heard the numbers of cases of students that are, you know, again, when I say we've heard this, it's only because faculty members talk amongst themselves. We'll say, hey, I had three students, you know, we don't tell you who they are, but say we had three students in class today who tested positive for COVID, and they're in a kind of a large auditorium that they've been there every single day. And it's a packed room. Right. I've had, you know, I get emails all the time about students who are, you know, they're concerned. They have to go get tested, right? And all this stuff. And all that we've been asking for from the get-go has having been kind of proper protocols and that we sure that we're going to do, like, we're going to go the extra mile to keep everybody safe. Instead, we're in this kind of like, you know, free-for-all, everyone for themselves, you know, grit and fortitude mode. And yet, this guy is the biggest freaking snowflake that's out there, right? This guy, you know, he says grit and fortitude, right? And like somebody talks about the possibility of protest and he flips a nut. It's just, you know, that's the condition that I'm living in these days, Sean.
Nice.
So, but there it is, everybody. So, you know, I would kind of put a link to this, the full email. It's just something else. And I, if anything, you know, what's nice and why I kind of save emails like this is that, you know, cause look, eventually there's going to be lawsuits. I'm not saying I am going to sue the university, right? I'm just saying, I know that there's going to be lawsuits and this becomes an artifact, right? In that lawsuit. Right. When it gets to the mentality and the intentionality behind the administration, because, you know, we've already talked about this, you know, this notion of a state created danger. Right. And if you have kind of the leaders of organizations, state organizations are willfully doing things right to suppress any kind of response or proper response or adequate controls, there's an argument to be made this is a state-created danger. And this helps get to some of the kind of mentality about where people's priorities are. So thank you for the document, COVID Ken. Thank you for the document. All right. So this is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken. That's what we got you here for the local stuff. We're going to be back right after this quick break, and we'll talk to you a little about what's going on kind of at our weekends and what we're looking at. And then we'll be out of here for the day. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken. We'll be back right after this quick break. Where are my people?
This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. For the past 7 years, Raging Chicken Press has brought pull no punches, progressive reporting and commentary to the interwebs. Our long-form investigative pieces, stories that no access journalist wants to touch, or rollicking weekly podcasts strive to advance progressive movements and perspectives rooted in the struggles happening across the country or down the street. We've broken national stories and caused our share of discomfort in the halls of power. If we want a progressive future, we need progressive media. And you can help support Pull No Punches, homegrown progressive media today. Become a member of Raging Chicken Press for as little as $5 a month. Simply go to patreon.com/rcpress and choose your membership level. We need to make sure to keep the movement in the media and the media in the movement. Best way you can do that is to become a member of Raging Chicken today by going to patreon.com/rcpress. Thank you for your energy, your encouragement, and your support. Keep up the fight.
Welcome back. It's today's last call. We just kind of tell you what's going on. And sometimes I have space news. Sometimes we had beer news. Right now, which is kind of, we got a quick outtake today. You know what I just realized, Sean, is I'm going to have fun clipping out that last segment that I just did and kind of posting it up as its own video too as well. So
nice. Cool.
Yeah, that'd be good. So, hey, what do you got going on for the weekend?
You should send it to COVID Ken.
Yeah, COVID Ken can have it. President COVID Ken.
Hashtag it, COVID Ken.
Yeah. You know, he's cultivated this nickname in some ways. I don't know where it originated, but there's this nickname that circulates for him on campus. It's called, like, K-Hawk. Right? And I'm like, and I have, you know, other faculty members call him K-Hawk. And I'm like, you don't.
Are you fucking kidding me? It's like so bro-ish. That's like, hey, bro. Like, well, I'm sorry, like, but like, I don't say, I'm sorry, I don't call my boss some like bro-ish nickname to like.
Totally, right? It's kind of gross to me.
Never fucking crossed my mind. Like,
they call him K-Hawk, right? I mean, I always used to call him Fohawk, right? If I'm going to have like this, like, but you know, I think COVID Ken's going to stick for a while. So at least in my little kind of like neck of the woods. But hey, what do you got going on this weekend?
I have absolutely nothing going on.
Nice.
Weekend.
That's awesome.
There is a pro-choice rally defending abortion reproductive rights on the Capitol steps Sunday 2:00. I will be going to that. Other than that, I will probably watch the Eagles, and that's about it.
There you go. Well, hey, you earned a nice little kind of week of relaxation of R&R and fun. So,
I mean, I actually have to wear like a sweater today because of like having the windows open. And it's like cool out.
I know. It's nice. It's nice. Look at you with your like Explorer hoodie on and all that stuff.
My
nice.
Zion Park hoodie.
There you go, man. There you go.
It was founded in 1919 when the white man said so.
Oh, 1919. Like, the year of the Palmer raids.
No, I look at the I was watching the history of Zion Canyon. It was actually pretty interesting. It was actually a canyon that the Native Americans didn't really settle in because it was a north-south facing canyon, and so it was like dark all the time instead of like an east-west facing canyon. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So it was just like something they just never went into, and the Mormons fell in love with it.
Yeah, so you're basically telling me it was really empty space, that so it's fine that the Mormons.
Oh no, it wasn't empty space. I'm sure people got driven off the land.
Yeah, no, exactly. Like, I'm just joking.
Yeah, no, I mean, but that's why I said like it's funny like looking at the stuff when like you see like the date on there. No, it's just like when the white people made it a park.
Yeah, right, exactly.
Pretty much.
Exactly. Well, cool. Yeah. So I'm going to be working all weekend. That's for sure. Because I've got, you know, student kind of discussions and all the stuff that's coming in. So that's probably going to do some of that. Hopefully we're going to, get some good family time in and, you know, talk. My kids are stressed and, you know, because of their school situation where you have, you know, a bunch of kids without masks and even some teachers without masks. The teacher situation has been altered from what I understand now, but, still, you have, I know students, there's been some students, you know, who've been circulating the kind of like unmask the kids memes on, their TikTok accounts and texts and things like this. So, you know, that's kind of the stresses that we're living right now, but, you know, I hope everybody will tune in. I'm looking forward to Out to Coop Live this Monday at 7 p.m. We're going to be talking with Don Curran and Carolyn Ciarino, candidates for the Penn Ridge School Board. They are just a couple of awesome women who are doing just kind of bang up work and running for this. And I am going to do whatever I can to kind of help them get elected. And I hope that you'll kind of tune in, listen, and think about ways that that you can help them out too as well. So kind of with that, I got to get out of here, Sean. So we're going to say a little bit of an adieu. Any final words for the good of the order?
No, nothing going up. We are actually going to put up another video from yesterday. Senator Steve Sancerio gave a really good speech on the Briley Foundation. So that's going to be going up this afternoon. So.
Fantastic. All right.
Yeah, we're going to have fun with this stuff.
Yep. Make sure you're following PA Spotlight on Twitter. I'm telling you. So, it's just great, great stuff. Or at least, you know, follow Sean's account too as well, at Pensinger, right? So there you go. All right, this is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken. I want to remind you that you can help support the show by going to patreon.com/RCPress and become a patron for as little as $5 a month. We will be back on Monday for Out to Coop Live. I believe that Cyril's going to be back on Wednesday. And then next Friday, we'll be back doing our thing. All right, this is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken. We'll be back next week or so. Have a good weekend, everybody. Stay in the struggle. Stay safe. Stay healthy. I know I'm doing my best. All right, everybody. See ya!